He's a Kansas State veterinarian. He's spent time in general and feedlot consulting practices. He has his PhD and board certification in clinical pharmacology. He's a past president for the Academy of Veterinary Consultants, and he's current president of the American College of Veterinary Clinical Pharmacology. He's also part of Beef Production Medicine, the Beef Production Medicine Group at Kansas State University. Welcome, Dr. Apley.
Thank you. Good morning. We'll follow up those two talks that really did a nice job of setting the stage for a place we hope we don't get to, and that's therapy in beef cattle. Now, I'm going to go over a few things that I've picked up in a career of struggling with exactly how to do this. But first, I'd like to bring you greetings from the Beef Production Medicine Group at Kansas State University. You probably recognize a few of the characters in that picture. We're having a good time trying to figure a few things out there. I think there's some basics of therapy, and Dr. Blanding did a nice job of going through some basic components. And I think there's five basic components of therapy that if you leave any of them out of your system, you might as well just hang it up. First one is characterizing your disease challenge. We've really got to understand what our true disease challenge is, and we're going to talk about some treatment outcomes. But you also have to look at what your true morbidity challenge is and the true causes of those morbidity. And there's some things, when it gets to the stage of being a chronic respiratory, other than what's present at the time that it succumbs to the disease, we're pretty sure respiratory is the problem. But you can get into some other interesting things challenging your operation, and without some work on that, you might come up short in actually realizing what it is. The other thing is taking the time to develop case definitions for when you will define therapy. And that sounds kind of academic at the output, but I've been in too many places that were floundering with their therapy programs, and part of the reason is they couldn't really agree on what to treat. You'd have huge discrepancies on someone treating over a weekend versus during the week, different people, what they're pulling and treating, and it made it very hard to evaluate the program. The third thing is regimen design, and that's one of the things we often want to cut to: what drug, how much, how often, what's the secret formula, what's the secret recipe, and we'll come back to that in a minute. Regimen design is very, very important. We'll talk about a few of the very important inclusions in that, but first you have to agree on what you're going to treat. Mitch mentioned consistent application of protocols, and that's one of my main messages also. Too many times we get that animal in the chute and we say, I think we ought to use this. I had a feedlot manager once tell me he could look that critter in the eye at the chute and tell whether it needed Thailan or Speck. And what do you say other than that's impressive? You know, we didn't exactly hit it off. And then outcome evaluation. You've got to go back and evaluate what happened. But the only time outcome evaluation matters is if you did something consistently. If you're not willing to invest the time to do something consistently, for heaven's sake, don't waste your time keeping records, and don't waste your time trying to evaluate records if you're not going to do it consistently. It's a combination of the hand you're dealt and how you play it. And we just listened to ways that you can have an impact on the hands you're dealt, on the demands you place on the cattle you buy, on how you raise your own cattle, and then what you deliver to the customer, who then realizes you're a source for delivering what they expect. I don't know any secret combinations or regimens. I run into a lot of people that do, and they're con artists. And you can tell them I said that. If they've got some secret recipe or combination, you're dealing with a con artist. The other day I got a call from a veterinarian whose a client received a group of cattle that the secret recipe was long-acting penicillin and dexamethasone pre-treatment and then a couple more times on arrival. Okay, hopefully everyone in this room is beyond that. If you're putting dexamethasone in sick cattle, we've got a real problem. Okay, hopefully we're beyond that. And that's one of the things I do know that can be adverse or make a difference. And when I say dexamethasone in sick cattle, I'm talking about respiratory disease cattle, either for prevention or for treatment. Okay? There's things we know that can cause a harm. Dexamethasone is used as a research model to stop neutrophil function function of the white cells in CAP. It's used as a research model for that. So what happens in treatment? Drug and the diseased animal are combined. Okay? And there's a black box that happens, and then there's outcome. So we get wondering, what in the world happens inside that black box? There's a lot of things. Being a pharmacologist, I looked at PK down there, pharmacokinetics, how the drug moves. There's nutrition, the regimen, pathogens, stage of disease it's interacted with, their immune status, whether we have the right diagnosis. PD is pharmacodynamics, how the drug interacts with it, right? All these things go into that black box. And our tendency is to do one or two things to that black box, and then if that outcome changes on the right side, we assume that that outcome difference is due to whatever we did to that black box. Well, in matter of fact, when we do something and then look at the next year or the next pen of cattle, a lot of other things happen in that black box. And we have to be careful that we don't put all of the difference that occurred on the little change we made. Huge differences can happen pen to pen, year to year, month to month. You all know that. Okay? We all know that in here. So that's why today I'm going to make some references to trials. What I've struggled to find in a prospective, randomized clinical trial that would be our highest level of evidence. So first, in characterizing disease, why is the animal sick? That's the case definitions I talked about. That's making sure that our application of treatment is going to an animal that's being treated for what we think it's being treated for. And that may require an investment in diagnostic tests, postmortem exams. And a lot of times we say, man, a postmortem exam, that animal's already dead. But it can be a very useful tool in helping you realize what you're actually treating. It'd be very valuable. Case definition again. There's a term, that case definition. One of the benefits of case definitions is when you train new people, think about how easy it would be if you said, this is what we look at for treating an animal. This is what we actually look at. And that characterizing disease also implies you know how it's spread. How it affects animals, so you can plan your prevention and management of sick animals. So let's look at an example of a case definition for respiratory disease. You need to go through and characterize these as important or misleading criteria. And one of the things I encourage you to do is find a veterinarian that wants to be involved in this with you. We all go to different meetings. We all have different life experiences. We're all learning in different segments. And putting that together on your team is a tremendous asset for you. So do you consider depression, nasal discharge, ocular discharge, rumen fill or appetite, rectal temperature, or lung sounds? All those possible things you could put together to try to have a diagnosis. This calf has a nice set of nose boogers here. Some of you may put different emphasis on nose. When it gets really thick and ropey, I get pretty concerned with them. This heifer was in a study where we actually put in implanted temperature transmitters, and we found if they had a real thick, ropey discharge, they were more likely to have an elevated temperature over their pin mates, but it didn't necessarily put them over 104 or something like that. But they could have an elevated temperature. Rumen fill, I always have that attract me to an animal, but I don't let a full rumen talk me out of pulling an animal. We're doing some more work again on actually listening to the lungs in high volume cases in feedlots and finding out it can help us quite a little bit. A lot of us might just combine a depression and a thermometer. But we're going to talk about evaluating your treatment outcome in a little bit. And you can use those evaluations of a consistently applied case definition to start saying, wow, am I missing some? Or should I be digging a little deeper in them? So here's the regimen design thing. And this is where we all want to believe that there's a certain regimen out there that will take a very poor hand we were dealt and turn it into a straight flush. Okay. I went back to grad school to find that, and I haven't been successful. and it's led me to the conclusion that maybe others haven't either, other than finding reasonable drugs that we apply in the best possible manner. So this regimen includes the drug, the dose, the route, and this is where we keep beef quality assurance foremost in our minds for the healthy and wholesome product we produce in this organization. When we start planning how and where we're going to give these products, our duration is becoming even more important. We have products now that you may have a post-treatment duration of 10 to 14 days before you would consider those animals for further treatment. It is incredibly important that you're well aware of those post-treatment intervals and that you institute a system that the minute they are eligible for further therapy, they are evaluated for further therapy. Too often we get a little casual about that, and then we have an animal out there that dies of neglect rather than lack of therapy because its therapy expired, it needed more therapy, and we lose track of which ones are ready to go on to more therapy. So put that in your protocol, how you're going to track those animals. I was at a feedlot recently with the long post-treatment interval drugs where they actually took little fairly sturdy cards, cut out a chunk, wrote the date they were eligible for further therapy, and tagged glued it to their forehead. You may use chalk, but some kind of system where when you look at that animal, someone out in the pen can look at that animal and go, it looks kind of punk, but it's got one more day before we'd repull it and treat it. Or it looks punk, and it's eligible now, out it comes. That's very important. And, of course, the slaughter withdrawal and frequency of administration. So the whole thing was on the title slide, just planning your work and working your plan. And so often it happens to us when we get into an outbreak, things aren't going the way we want them to, and we start reaching and grabbing and switching. And I cannot think of a time where in the middle of a serious wreck, it was turned around because we swapped to another drug. I can tell you what I have seen happen is drugs were given the credit for turning a wreck around. But when you listen to this, you'll all realize you already knew it. When you get in a group of high-risk calves and they shell on you right away, those calves you treat in the first 3 or 4 days, what do you think the case fatality rate will be, which is the number that die out of the number you treated? What will you think that case fatality rate will be versus the ones you treat the second week? Think it'll be higher or lower? Everyone thinks it's higher. Same. Right. Why is it higher? Those calves are further along in the disease process. They're displaying the signs to you while they're in the highest stress period on arrival. So do you think the drug that's used to treat those calves in those first 3 or 4 days is going to look like it does better or worse than a drug you panic and switch to after 5 or 6 days? It's going to look worse. So there's a whole group of high-efficacy first-line antibiotics out there we can choose from. To think that switching between those in a group of those calves made the difference, but yet we'll think it did because we go back and, well, I switched to that second drug, they stopped dying. Be careful you're comparing apples to apples. And that's why I always go back to controlled studies. And again, stay consistent through the fog times, the fog of a wreck. Things get crazy in the middle of that. You've got calves, you're treating, you're tired. Plan that ahead of time and stick with that protocol. So again, a good protocol, and there's a sample protocol you can look at. Doesn't mean that's the way you have to build it, but it's got a lot of stuff included in it. You've got to have that case definition. And you may not agree with my case definition. I may not agree with yours. That's fine. There's a lot of good ones that work. But the important thing is you have one. Your initial therapy regimen, dose, route, duration, frequency, post-treatment interval, slaughter withdrawal. Then case definition for success or failure. And then what happens if there is success or a failure? Does that animal have to have a normal temperature for me to call it a treatment success? What I've figured out is if that animal looks normal at the end of the post-treatment interval, I don't want to know what its fever is. A lot of those things will carry a temp and go out and do fine. And with the experience you have, you can say that animal's recovered, it's eating, it's drinking, it's bright and alert. Some of those have a fever for a while longer. Save your drugs for the ones that need it. And then what happens with ones that are a treatment failure? What do I do the next time? So now let's talk just a little bit about how we'd evaluate outcomes. There's what we hope to get, and that's a first treatment success. That's an animal that was not treated again after the first treatment regimen. It was not treated again. A chronic, that's one that has not responded to the complete treatment regimen. Okay? And I have a hard time thinking that three treatment regimens, more than three for a respiratory disease case, does as much of any good. Some of those long post-treatment interval drugs, maybe two is all you need. Two total ones. We do expect our chronics to always be equal to or at least half of our deads. So when we count up our mortality number, we always expect our chronics to be half or equal to that. Now, I always chill when I hear of high mortality incidents because I know that they've got non-performing animals rather than the ones that, you know, maybe lose a couple tenths of a pound a day, but there's a lot of them in there that are really seriously hurt. Treatment failures are the ones that are treated again immediately following the end of that post-treatment interval. Then retreats or relapses, we use 21 days. They get out there. They've been a treatment success for 3 or 4 weeks. And then they come back and are treated again. And we argue about, well, is it a continuation or a new one? We're not sure, but we tend to use 21 days as the break of saying it's a relapse or after 21, it's a new episode. And you can keep track of those numbers. If you evaluate your case fatality rate, right? Your case fatality rate, again, is dividing the number that died by the number that were treated. And for respiratory disease and some of these calves the ones Mitch and Glenn talked about that come off a ranch that they've been well prepped, they've been weaned, they've been vaccinated, they're ready to go, their bunk broke, the stress is low, we expect to see 1 to 2% of the low number treated that die. When you get in the ones that are done the opposite side of the coin, everything wrong, we can see as many as 10% or more of the ones that are treated that become mortalities with an equal, almost equal set of chronics. It's very important you understand the expected case fatality rate for the type of cattle you are dealing with, and then you keep track of your case fatality rate. Look back at that. If you're running a 15% case fatality rate in pre-vaccinated, weaned, low-risk, short-haul calves, something's wrong. We're getting to them too late, or something's wrong. Now, the thing you compare that with is morbidity, which is the percent you treat. We'd hope to have 5% or less morbidity. The very first thing to figure out when you're in a wreck, is it a morbidity problem or is it a case fatality problem? Do I have cattle that have died because they didn't respond to treatment or because I treated a whole lot and the treatment response was acceptable? If the answer is I treated a whole lot of cattle and the treatment response was acceptable, obviously switching drugs or adding drugs is not going to make a difference, yet that's the knee-jerk reaction in a lot of breaks. So, first question, is this a morbidity or a case fatality problem? Let your head get clear, you sit down and look at those numbers, and you can start driving your way out of it. Here's a basic treatment record. A lot of times, the electronic treatment records, unless there's some that are really targeting this application, can be kind of pricey for some of the producers in the feeding 1,000 or 2,000 head a year, or smaller. Maybe you feed a couple hundred, or you're trying to keep track of health in your calves. There's some out there that can help you. There's nothing wrong with a basic treatment record like this that just lets you follow through and see what's happened with the cattle. So one of the other things I've mentioned in your handout is that we should keep several things in mind. We've already mentioned the beef quality assurance guidelines. The American Association of Bovine Practitioners have put out a set of judicious antimicrobial use principles that have been endorsed and are also put out by the American Veterinary Medical Association. And the other thing is the Animal Medicinal Drug Use Clarification Act, or AMDUCA regulations. And all those you can Google on the web and find. The AMDUCA regs talk specifically about what's required, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. So I'm going to take a few excerpts out of those judicious antimicrobial use guidelines, and an antimicrobial is a specific name for some of the antibiotics. And let's go through them on what they say, and then I'll give you what I think they mean for us as we start looking at these programs. The first one is select and use antibiotics carefully. Consult with your veterinarian on the selection and use of antibiotics. Have a valid reason to use an antibiotic. And therapeutic alternatives should be considered prior to using antimicrobial therapy. When you get into calf scours now, I think everyone in here realizes that fluids and addressing acidosis in those calves is more important for most of the causes of calf scours than is an antibiotic. So there's other therapies that need to be in there along with or instead of, in some cases, an antibiotic. So my interpretation is don't just throw antibiotics at cattle. Get more information than just from the coffee shop, feed store, or the route truck. You've got to really consider the post-treatment interval. You've got to consider the label applications of these drugs, and then pick one and go with it. Combination antibiotic therapy is discouraged unless there's clear evidence this practice is beneficial. Okay. Now, this is like jumping up in a bar and say, anyone who drives a Ford's an idiot, and then fight your way to the door, right? Pick your brand. Okay, Dodge. The take home from this is there is no evidence out there that using more than one antibiotic at a time is beneficial in cattle. For BRD, for foot rot, for calf scours when it's indicated, for pink eye, I have not been able to come across.